Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I am Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamond.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you today, Robert?
Well, Russell, today I am feeling a bit like that Joni Mitchell song, Both Sides Now, because today we are meeting both sides of a portrait, perhaps. We are meeting a muse, a model, but she's actually also an artist, a writer, and a very prolific life model as well, because so many people have made artworks depicting her image, including even her nephew. I've seen a really beautiful portrait of her. He was 8 years old at the time. His name is Reynard. So big shout out to him.
And we'd be thrilled.
And we're also meeting an amazing artist, a painter, who currently has an exhibition at the Sunday Painter of paintings that he's made of today's other guest. So we have both sides of making art, and I am so proud, in particular talking to the muse herself, because she is someone that has inspired me for literally since I was about 15 years old. And I had very close friendships with like Matthew Glamour, who was in a band called Minty, which was also Lee Bowery's band originally, who was incidentally the best friend of today's guest. So it kind of feels like a very special moment for me personally as well. So I'm very thrilled to welcome to Talk Art, finally, the one and only
Sue Tilly and Rui Ferreira.
Hello, pleased to meet you.
It's so great to meet you at last. I've literally been wanting to meet you all my life. You have no idea.
Oh.
And we're meeting virtually today, but hopefully I get to give you a big hug soon.
I hope so.
Well, we met virtually during lockdown, Sue. I think we had a chat on one of your art shows at some point. Am I making that up?
I think you're making it up. I did meet you in a lift at Louis Vuitton at one of Kim Jones' parties.
Of course.
I was there that night.
Oh, wait. Well, perhaps I met you then.
That's so weird. I was there that night. That's years ago.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where do we find you both in the world right now? Because you're sat next to each other.
St. Leonard's-on-Sea.
I love that.
Where is St. Leonard's-on-Sea?
Sue's living room.
Oh, it's Sue's living room.
Near Hastings.
Okay. And Sue, you're from London originally.
I am.
And you now live in St. Leonard's. And Rui, you're from Portugal.
Lisbon.
Lisbon, in Portugal.
Yeah, Lisbon.
But when you live in the UK permanently?
I studied in the UK in 2010. And just now, I'm visiting Sue now and then. And I come to St. Leonard's just because of her.
Oh, thanks. But mostly he lives in Lisbon, don't
yes.
he?
Oh, yes. Yes. I'm between Lisbon and Vienna, actually.
Ah, and you two first met in 2013, is that correct?
It is.
And can you talk a bit about how you met and how the whole kind of connection grew and blossomed?
You can say.
No, I always love to hear Sue's version. But we basically met in a charity event where I was modeling nudes, and Sue was talking about Lucien and modeling for a portrait.
With my clothes on.
Yeah. And so it's just a very interesting sequence of events, because I was studying at Goldsmiths and I was researching on Lee Bowery, and I went to the library, found this VHS tape, and Sue was there as Lee's biographer. And I was like, oh, I really like this person. And then the opportunity to meet her appeared. Yeah.
And he charmed me with his bizarre stories.
Yes. Wait,
like
maybe.
What?
So Sue had to find a teacher to host this class. And this brilliant teacher, Adrian Dutton, invited me. And then all he said, like, you do your usual routine, take your dressing gown, do like small little poses, etc. But I took my dressing gown too soon. And I looked at everyone in the room, and Sue was kind of looking at me with a very warmly I don't know. I just found
a very attractive young man.
Yeah, exactly. So that kind of like, wow. And I felt like I could really talk to her. So I did all my poses. And in the end, I just went straight to her and start chatting. And yeah, maybe you can tell.
And then, I don't know, he said, can I have your phone number? I went, oh.
Yeah, exactly.
But then he just texted me. And I'm not a great texter. And I was getting about 20, 30 texts a day. I thought, this is very entertaining.
Oh, wait. So before that, I just told you the story that I had been to this spanking club, the Hoist, and it was a really cool experience for me. But I had this vision of Sue actually as a character in Max Ernst's painting, Virgin Spanking Jesus. And so that's what I asked her straight away. I would love to do a project with you where I would be just sitting on your lap and you'd spank me. And that was the start of it.
Wow.
You know, I'm open for mischief. So I joined in.
That's brilliant.
So, and the other one, because I was so interested in Lucian Freud and the dynamic between the model and the artist, the established and the one I was kind of researching on, I also asked her if I could do the pose where a fan enters the studio and hugs the knees of the artist, and I said, okay, but we're going to reverse roles. I'll be the model always, and I'll be nude, and you'll be the artist, and you can be embody Lucian Freud, actually. And that's the start of it.
So you met as a fanboy or a fangirl?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Fan person.
Both. Yes. Yeah. In between, switching roles and always, yes, from the observer point of view, the model and the artist, yeah, maybe the girl and the boy, why not?
Yeah, well, this is a self-portrait series, the title of the series is called Posing for Sue, and it's 10 years of photos and films taken of you both that are then made into paintings, and this is currently up at the Sunday Painter. I mean, what is the anticipation feeling like?
I'm beside myself with excitement, but it's like I'm a bit nervous because it's really weird, because we've got this weird friendship that it's just us two, really, because when he lived here, he met my friends, but usually I haven't seen him for a year until last week, and we just chat all the time. It's our private little life, and the people would be shocked, I think, when they see the mischief we get up to, but you know, it's not really sexy. It's just for my own entertainment, because I love weird things, and I go, once he came around my house, I picked him up at the airport, right at my house, and then went, will you crawl around the floor like a horse, then I'll sit on your back naked.
Exactly.
And I just thought, oh, all right then. Just better than watching the telly.
Yeah, sure, why not?
Okay, this is also another very old drawing of, let's say, a young person sitting. No, yeah. I wanted to reverse this very old drawing. But this just shows two quite different point of views that I'm meeting, because for me, there was always a very structured narrative, and I've really fond of Sue, but I kind of had the narrative quite in my head. I knew what I was doing. And
see, I just thought we were having fun.
Yeah.
And I didn't realise it was a big art project.
Definitely.
I'm just going, oh, this is good.
But was it funny? Were you taking photos or filming these sequences, or do you work from memory?
No, even if the work is a bit about reworking memory, I do films, and then that's the first time I went to Sue's place. I installed the camera with the tripod and everything. It was just doing it as professionally as I could and with the best camera I had at the time. And then it became a bit more organic with using the mobile on the floor. And so sometimes Sue says she's not even realizing we are filming, but I'm asking her, like, can we do a pieta? And I'm just like, wait a minute, I'm going to take my clothes off. And so... yeah, it's always following a little guideline and
yeah, but I don't, because he's quite secretive, so I don't really know what's happening. I'll just be there, well, and because he likes me, because I'm easygoing, and lots of girls go, oh no, I'm not doing that. I go, oh, all right then.
I love that. Well, I can't wait to see this show. It sounds like you're subverting the role of the artist and the muse, and you're also looking at art historical images and subverting
definitely
those.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about you, Sue, because this is
okay.
A real...
You can go now.
No, we'll come back to you. But we're talking about art historical significance, and you appear as a muse, and I've also read that you kind of not very happy with the word muse. You find it quite a troubling.
No.
Why would that be? Let's talk about that then.
I imagine Because I used to, you know, I've enjoyed art all my life, and I think of, you know, the pre-Raphaelite women who are in love with the artist, and they do anything, and they end up sort of drowning and dying of pneumonia, and they waft around and then kill themselves because the artist doesn't love them anymore. I don't think I'm really that type. I'm a bit too down and to earth and normal. But I really have to, you know, I hate saying it, but I'm beginning to think that perhaps I am a muse. But it's a bit of an embarrassing thing to call yourself, isn't it, really?
Well, I mean, you should claim it. It gives you agency because, like, you've inspired a whole new body of work with Rue, you feature in four paintings, some etchings, and also an unfinished painting that you don't even remember being made by the artist Lucian Freud.
You've done a lot of good research.
I have.
I always do.
And these are these paintings have huge art historical significance. And I would just love to talk about how you have become, I think you described yourself as the accidental muse.
I know.
It's an amazing place to find yourself because when you are a living muse and you're part of art history.
I know. Sometimes I think it and I think, because you know, most of the time I have a very mundane, normal life. Well, I think it is. Other people probably wouldn't. But then suddenly I think, and I'm, you know, in the country, in the seaside, and then suddenly I think to myself, blimey, it's quite fascinating what happened to me, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I can't quite, you know, because when I started work for, because I was good friends with Lee Barry and he was working for Lucian and he decided I should work for him. But because they're both control freaks, Lee had to convince Lucian it was his idea. So anyway, that worked. But I just thought, oh, it's a little job, you know. I was working in a nightclub. I thought I'd do that. It's, you know, a bit easier. And then my first day I went, I thought, I can't do it. It was so uncomfortable. I thought, I'm going to die. I can't do it. I thought, no, you're a tough old bird. Yes, you can.
You were young then.
Oh, yeah, I was younger. You're saying I'm not young now?
then... So this was in the early 90s, and you were working in a job centre in Charing Cross.
And then the nightclub at the Wag Club.
You were working at Taboo as a cashier on the door in the evenings, which was Lee Bowery's club.
That was 10 years before that.
Oh, really? So that's how you met Lee, through working on the door?
No, I met him at a nightclub, and then he asked me to work on the door.
I see. But you were working this. You were a benefits supervisor at a job centre where you became the manager, and you were there for 37 years. But you were that was your day job, and then in the evening you were like a linchpin within this club kid movement that is also
just out all the time.
You must have been exhausted. I mean, you must have been exhausted.
Never went home.
Did people get their benefits, or were they?
I know. I was like, well, luckily, I used to get to work and someone just lie on the desk and think, I'm going to die. Once I even puked up at work and had to rush out. I was interviewing someone, I thought, oh, I'm going to be sick. I had to run to the toilet. And everyone there all thought I was a bit, you know, I could never really fit in anywhere. Because at the job centre, I thought, well, she's a bit weird, she does this and that. Then people, nightclub people go, oh, she's a bit weird, she works in a job centre. A lot of them signed on with me, so that was quite funny.
Did they?
I even got Princess Julia a little job in a knicker factory.
Love that. Oh, Julia.
She didn't last long. It wasn't for her.
So how did Lee Bowery, you were best mates, how did Lee then connect with Freud? How did that sort of connection happen to begin with?
Well, as you might know, Lucian's got quite a lot of children. So it's a good opportunity. You might know one of them.
Right.
And I think one of our friends, you know, the artist, Kerith Wynne Evans, and at the time he was going out with Angus Cook. And I think Angus Cook had been at university with one of the children, the daughters. And so she had introduced Angus to Lucian. So he started working for him. He introduced Kerith. Kerith started working for him. And they used to talk about Lee. And so Lucian thought that was really, he'd like to meet Lee. So he did, and then painted him. And then he painted me.
And you say working rather than sitting or rather than being amused.
Oh, yeah, I call it work.
Did it feel like work then the whole time?
Good job. It was a good job to have because basically, you know, in real life, you don't have much time to sit and think. When you feel guilty, you should be doing something else. It was like 6 hours that you could just think and do exactly as you please. You didn't have to do the washing up. You didn't have to worry you hadn't done the washing. You're just lying there. I mean, it was a bit uncomfortable sometimes, but I soon got used to it. And, of course, he was talking and he was great entertainment.
And I heard that Lucian as well had a very particular kind of approach to who he wanted to paint, because he believed that the physical presence of that person would contribute to the greatness of A, the way that he could paint, but also the final, you know, composition of the image and the kind of soul within the painting, which I think is so fascinating. I'd never really thought about that until I was researching.
I know, like, he wouldn't, you know, because there was all these floorboards, you know, and I go, can't you paint them when I'm not here? And he went, no, because your aura and your skin has to be reflected in those floorboards. So I possibly can't paint it without you. But the main thing he liked, people, reliable.
Oh, really? Like, so you'd always be there? Yeah.
So how did you have a day job? Reliable. How did you have a day job and then be able to sit for him for so many hours?
I did it for about 3 years. I never had a day where I didn't go to work, not Saturday or Sunday, nothing, maybe about two. But so I worked 9 to 5. And then the first painting was nighttime, so I could do that after work. And I said I wasn't going to work past 1. So I'd drive home, go to sleep quick, and then get up in the morning. Then a couple of nights a week I was working in a nightclub. But after that, the paintings became day paintings. So I did Saturday and Sunday, but then he was always begging me to take a day off work. And luckily, we used to get tons of holiday, just so much. I had to just give it back because we got so much. So I was always had a day off of work, a week as well, probably, so I could go there.
And you chose that day off to go and sit for Freud. So
I did.
So you must have absolutely loved this experience.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was. And he was so interesting and told you such hilarious stories and everything. That it was worth it.
What are
people
some
think
of those
he never
stories?
Spoke. I go, he never shuts up.
What are some of those stories? Because didn't he tell you, like, gossip about kind of, like, very iconic celebrities and kind of film stars?
Like, when I was in the car with Cecil Beaton and when I met Judy Garland, she had a very limp handshake.
Love it.
Things like that. And then he'd recite poetry.
Really?
And then be so rude about people. But of course, I loved that. As you imagine.
And didn't he meet Greta Garbo as well?
Oh, yes. I can't remember. Yeah, with Cecil Beaton. I think they're in the car driving through the country together.
I just couldn't get my head around that one. I was like, Greta Garbo?
I know, imagine meeting Greta Garbo.
I'm like, I love this.
I know. But he was so naughty when he was young. Yeah. Like, he was always just, he never passed his driving test and just drive, taking people's cars and crashing them and just... completely wild.
Free spirit, yeah.
Yeah, and of course all the ladies.
Oh, yeah, you love the ladies. So you were talking about the floorboards just then, and I think this refers to the first painting that you sat for, which was called Evening in the Studio in 1993. And in this, you are naked and sprawled on the floor. So how long was you on the floor for? How uncomfortable was that? And what was it like when he first said, you know, I want you to take all your clothes off and lie there naked, and his eyes are on you? Because you hear a lot of stories about Lucian Freud's eyes when he went into, like, a trance-like state.
Petrifying. But, well, so Lee had sort of been the in-between it all, and he was originally in that painting. So he came around my house, and then we drove together, but in my house he made me take my clothes off and lie on the settee just to practice. And then we got there, and so I knew I'd had to take my clothes off.
Sorry, who made you practice? Lee did? Or...
Lee.
Yeah, right.
Lee,
okay.
Always very bossy. And so we got there, because he was in the painting originally. It was me, Lee and Nicola. So Lee was on the bed, Nicola was in the chair, and I was on the floor. Oh, I was so uncomfortable. I thought I would die. But then he pressed his dirty old pillows behind me. They were so filthy. But at the same time, I thought they were quite thrilling, because they must have had the DNA of all his sitters in them. So there I was, lying in these cushions that goodness knows who'd lied on. And then Lee, after 2 days, he wanted to go and do a job in Scotland, so Lucian sacked him and put the dog in the place instead.
How long were the poses?
Poses, that was... So each painting took 9 months, and that's usually about 3 sessions a week of about 7-8 hours. His face.
And how many minutes on a row?
The first session in the morning was usually the longest, because it was quite quiet. Because, you know, all these deliveries and things came and everything. That's the only interruption. So sometimes I'd sit an hour and a half in that position. And then you say, oh, you can have a break. And then sometimes the phone would ring. I'd be so... But only 3 people knew his phone number. So unfortunately, it didn't ring very often. So that was exciting.
Who would that be? Like Frank Auerbach and one of his daughters or something?
One daughter, Bella, I think. And his lawyer, I think. And a lady. I don't even know if Frank Auerbach had it. But of course, we did know it because when you phoned, in those days, when someone phoned you, you could do this number on your phone and get the number.
Oh, yeah, like 1471 or whatever it was.
Yeah, that was it. Friday phone. So we did know it, but we didn't, never dared ring it. But I think Lee sometimes used to spook ring him. So if we had, for some reason, we couldn't go. David Dawson had his number. We had to go through David Dawson, who'd then tell him.
And David Dawson, we've had on Talk Art, and David Dawson
was his studio
manager and looks after his, protects his estate now and works with him. Yeah. But, I mean, I find it quite sad then that you never were in a portrait with your best friend in the end because he got...
I know.
That would have been amazing if you'd have still...
I know. I'm very jealous. That one of him and Nicola, I love that one. You know, where they're lying on the bed and the bridegroom or something.
Yes, yeah.
But Lucien didn't know they were married, so that was really weird. But I don't know if they were married when he did it, but that was all a secret marriage.
Wowee. So you were sprawled on the floor in the first one, and then the second one, which is actually, I think, the most famous one, which is a benefit supervisor sleeping, which is the one that we have seen because of its record-breaking auction price. Nice. Now, that one, you're introduced to a sofa. So did that feel like a step up? Was that an exciting moment for you to know you was going to be?
I hadn't been there for a year because I'd been on holiday and I'd got really tanned, so he couldn't paint me.
Oh, he hated tans, right?
Tans repulse him, and makeup, everything. And so when I walked in and saw that sofa, I was so thrilled. And you can see how shabby it is and everything. It cost about £3,000, I think, because it's some old, really old sofa. But it was quite itchy, but...
And was that the same sort of experience that you would be spending that amount of time going in, sitting, coming back? And did you know each time he made a painting that he would then go, I've got another idea for a painting with you?
Yeah.
So you would? You'd know that you'd had more work coming up?
Yeah.
And, I mean, what was the transaction when it came to monetary stuff? Would he give you...
Well,
go on.
Yeah, it was all... He had drawers for the £50 notes. I think he'd go to the bank and take £4,000 in £50 notes out. So he had to be paid in something that divided into 50. So no, 100. So I started off on £20 a day. So he'd pay me £100 every 5 days I'd been. And then I negotiated and I went, could you make it 25? So I got £100 every 4 days. Then I got even more devilish and go, can it be £33 a day? So I ended up getting paid every 3 days. But then you get really expensive, £100 lunch at the River Cafe and things like that, which sometimes that's more better than just cash, isn't it?
That's nice. Yeah, so he would... go on.
I heard that he was a really great cook as well, but he would often take you out for lunch.
Yeah, but he was a bizarre cook. He very much lived... He had the hay diet and he didn't really eat carbs at all.
Ah.
Me. I'm the queen of a carb.
Oh, I love a carb.
So,
me too.
Yeah. And then he'd give you things like... He followed Elizabeth David. So it was like cooking the most expensive, beautiful ingredients, the simplest way ever. So sometimes I go, here, can you do this? And I'd sit and peel broad beans. I very much like taking them out of the husk, you know, the velvety thing.
Yeah.
But then I had to get my nails and take the little skin off each broad bean. But to be honest, when he cooked them, they were so delicious, it was worth it.
So he really looked after you. Like, you,
oh, yeah,
you weren't just seeing...
He didn't want you to leave.
Oh, he didn't. He wanted you to...
Because imagine if you walked out, he'd be stuck with half a finished painting.
Right.
So he was a workaholic, do you think?
Yeah, and that's why there's lots of self-portraits of him, because he always had one on the go, because if someone didn't turn up, he was there, so he could paint himself.
So he just painted 24/7, like, all the time?
Yeah, well, I don't know. See, the first session was usually at 7:30 in the morning. But, you know, it depends on time of year, because of the light and everything. And that person would probably work till 3:30. Then he might go and see someone, have a little nap, and then the next person probably be there about 5 or 6 until 1 or 2 in the morning.
Would you see all these paintings? Like, would you see yourself?
Yeah.
You would see yourself at every stage of the painting?
Yes, that was so interesting. So every time you go, you could catch up on all the other paintings and how far they come and what's happened. And before I started working for him, Lee showed me a book of all the paintings and that. And then gradually over time, I met all the people in all the paintings, which I really enjoyed. Because I always think his art shows are like Tracy Emin's tent, you know, everyone I ever slept with. But his shows, the whole huge show, is everyone I ever knew. And they're all kind of slightly interrelated. Like even my brother's old girlfriend, he painted her. He'd never met her. But I told him that my brother had dumped his girlfriend, decided he'd paint her. It was a bit weird.
What, and she just turned up? You said, come to the studio, he wants to paint you, and he did?
Yeah, and he just painted her, yeah. Done about 3 pictures of her.
I love that. I find it so interesting how, like, when I, people often say to me, like, because I run a gallery in Margate, and people often say, how do I get represented by your gallery? And I always say, I discover artists through other artists. But it seems like he found sitters through other sitters.
There was, yeah, obviously exactly. Some kind of, completely true.
I think he just liked the authenticity, didn't he, of the stories of the people. He must have found that really, like, captivating.
Real people living I know, then real
of course,
lives.
Cause we sort of, yeah, and we can talk about each other because we know each other and it all interlinks and all that.
It's quite beautiful.
Just like there was me, Lee, Nicola, Kerith, Angus. You know, we all knew each other and it was all very bizarre. Kerith was always very disappointed he wouldn't paint him naked.
Why would he not? Because
I don't know why.
So what were the rules for that then?
I don't know why not.
What were the rules for some people naked, some
we
people...
We don't know. Don't know.
I think it's also, it really fascinates me that he's able to paint you and then stop and go to another painting and do that one and then stop and then go back to another painting. I mean, I would always just imagine that it's a free flow of work and it's almost methodical, the way that he paints.
Yeah.
It's like, that's so fascinating. I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, and it's so, and because people sometimes say to me, oh, what did you think when you finally saw the picture? I went, well, have you actually seen the size of it? Because it was so big, he couldn't stand behind it to paint like people do. It was kind of an angle. And he was like facing me just so he could just look at me, then go to the canvas like that. So it was in front of me the whole time.
So he would turn around to look at you, then go back to the canvas?
Yeah.
So was this the eye thing then? What was the eye thing
you did?
Yeah,
and then sometimes if he was wanted, his eyes would just go so huge because he thought the bigger his eyes were, the better he could see. So it'd be like that. Really scary.
That's
creepy. It was a bit scary. I know. And I said this the other day, and sometimes I'd fall asleep and I suppose I'd flop a bit. So I'd be lying there and I'd suddenly go, oh, and these eyes were staring at me and he was just moving my bosom back in place.
No. So
I didn't take offence.
So that money at the time, was that good money? And it was that?
No, it was poor money.
Oh, it was. Okay.
But, you know, people were always writing him letters. I want to be a model and everything. It was a privilege to be allowed to do it. So I can't complain. And it changed my life, really. You know, made it more exciting.
And I was going to say, etchings. Like, what's that?
And the etchings. Sold the etchings, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He gave you etchings?
Every time he gives an etching, I think it's the rule, we have to give you one. When I was hard up, I just sold them.
That's great, though.
I know, but...
5 million you could have.
Not 5 million now. And no. Then just pass them on, you know, then someone else enjoys them as well. I like passing things on.
Yeah,
it's pleasure for someone else.
What's it like sort of becoming well known in a way through those paintings? Because I feel like people must recognise you, or when they find out who you are, like, because, you know, paintings...
Yeah, they're excited.
Yeah, and the paintings now have sold for, like, you know, multi millions, like 35 million, like ridiculous, crazy figures. And I've seen a picture of you even with, like, the Duchess of Cambridge with Kate. You know what I mean? Like, you're
That's
actually
one of my
meeting
highlights
royalty.
Of my life.
Was it? What was it like to meet her?
It was her first ever public appearance on her own.
Really?
Yeah, it was the opening of the exhibition at the National Portrait Gallery, which was, it was such an exciting week. It was lovely. And they go, yeah, we don't know if you'll meet her or not, but be prepared and all this. And it was all shuffling around. And they went, stand there. She's coming. You've got to meet her. And she was so lovely. And I mean, she must have been nervous. It's her first ever appearance on her own. And I had this red flowery thing on my head. She said, oh, that's lovely. Where did you get it? So she had like a nice normal conversation, subjects I like.
So the third painting you had was in 1994, Benefits Supervisor Resting.
Yeah.
And then the last one that you made was in 1996, which is Sleeping by the Lion Carpet. And then after that, you didn't work with him anymore.
No.
What happened there?
You know, people say put stories into his paintings. They're not really stories at all. They're tests of himself and his skills and his talent and what he can see and how he can represent it. So that's why people are always weird angles, because he likes to practice foreshortening and everything. And he's had his time with me, you know, he'd seen enough of my body. He'd finished it, so that was that. And I think I'd upset him as well during the last painting.
Really?
How? I went to France to... for an exhibition of his work. I go, oh, please, can I go? And he paid for me to go and everything. And he, whatever you do, don't go in the sun. You mustn't go in the sun. And I'm so stupid and slightly mischievous and don't like being told what to do. So I went in the sun.
God damn.
Not on purpose. It's just inside my head. And then all his daughters were there. And when I went back to work, I thought, I'm going to be in trouble. So I sat there and I tried to distract the moment where I had to take my clothes off. And he just went, but then didn't tell me off, got on the phone to Bella and told her off because she was with me and she should have stopped me. I know. And then, so I think he thought I wasn't as reliable as he thought after that. And he had to do an etching while the suntan faded.
No way, really?
Yeah.
So what was the last work?
So it was all right, so I got an etching.
What was the last work he made with you then?
Yeah.
The etching
was... that painting. No, the etching was in the middle while the tan faded and he went back to doing the picture.
And what's after you finished working together, was that kind of sad for you? Because I guess if you're having all these very personal conversations, because, you know, as you're sitting, I know you fell asleep occasionally, but you did obviously get to know each other. Yeah. There must have been a real intimacy between the two of you, however kind of unusual a human being he was, and intense, of course, because he's painting.
Yeah, but very entertaining.
Yeah, so did you sort of mourn that friendship, or was it okay?
Not really, no.
No.
I mean, he phoned me up a couple of times for a chat, and I saw him a couple of times at openings and things. But, you know, I move on. I'm not one for being stuck in the past. Change, move on, do this. And, so that was that.
He's been described as an unrivaled interpreter of human flesh in paint. And I've read a quote that you said that he got value for money with you because he got a lot of flesh.
And a lot of people go, oh, do you think it looks horrible? You just mortifier. No, because to be honest, the thin girls don't look much better. They're just all bony and scrawny. And I think I look very voluptuous and comfortable on that sofa.
Yeah, you do.
So what does it feel like then to be in a painting that is owned by Roman Abramovich, I think, still? And, and all of the paintings of you are actually in private collections. They're not in, like, national collections.
People can't afford them.
It's so
galleries can't afford them.
It's so sad. So they appear when there's like retrospectives or survey shows of his work. Yeah. But I mean, what does that feel like to know that you are there on someone's living room? And
because the one that sold for loads, that was originally in someone's house in St John's Wood in their television room, and they made a little television program about it. So I went round there, was thrilled. I go, nothing I love more than lying on sofa watching telly. But it was so nice to see in situ. And then I met a woman who owns the other similar one on the sofa, and it was in her dining room in Boston. Good idea to put people off their food so they wouldn't eat so much. And but unfortunately, those two couldn't be in the last exhibition at the National Gallery because they're owned by Russians and there's an embargo. Wow. So it was really weird, but I was still quite excited that I was part of the Ukraine war. I was affected by it personally.
Because
they couldn't have them in the show.
Yeah, that's wild.
But that's a shame because they're my favourites, but still. But it does, I would love them to be in museums. I hate when people, you know, rich people buy art just for make money. They don't love it, they don't want it. It's just, and they put it away, no one can see it. It's just so it makes money for them. It's horrible.
It's also really mad that idea that a painting can become such a politicised object. You know, that the war, you know, it's now involved in kind of nations fighting and war.
I know.
Sort of
very
dark,
bizarre,
fascist
isn't
kind
it?
Of crazy shit. Yeah. Can we talk a bit about the club era? For me, I first heard about you when I was doing gigs at Cash Point via Matthew Glamour, because I used to hang out quite a bit with Matthew outside of the club scene.
He lives near here sometimes.
Does he?
In a green van by the sea.
Oh, I love that man. He's amazing. But I heard about you that way, and I heard some amazing quotes that you've said about Taboo and the whole kind of London club scene at that era. Like, there was one thing you said about if you came to the club, you either died or you became a great success, because a lot of people in that environment were either, like, you know, living life to the limits, or they were super creative and inventive. And that was my experience too, even in the late 90s, early 2000s. You know, I was hanging out, I did a duet with Princess Julia, for example, like, you know, she's become such an amazing friend as well. But
I think her and me have done very well.
Really well.
We've never been drug addicts or anything. Had any real... like, loads of people from that scene, like George and Marilyn, loads have died. You know, they've had awful things happen, so they've ended up in prison.
Yeah.
Fact only. Yeah. Us two sensible girls, we've been all right.
But what?
And we've carried on as well. We don't live in the past. And we've carried
true.
On sort of evolving as we get older and changing. And when people say things, do we just go, oh, yeah, we will. And you find things out.
Yeah. I was interested in the idea that, like, Lee and yourself, like, and everyone who went to those club nights, you were, like, pushing ideas of gender, body shapes, just freedom of being, freedom of thought. So, like, now, you know, with all of the kind of progression of non-binary and kind of the support for the trans communities and, you know, kind of opening our minds to people being able to be themselves and have a free life, like, I feel like the club scene was a kind of place that I personally felt safe, you know, and that you could be yourself.
But can I just, I'm so shocked. A lot of gays, like gay men I know my age.
Yeah.
They're so shocked. They're so rude about transgender and non-binary and all that. I go, what's the matter with them? What's it matter? It's not hurting you.
I know.
What's the fuss? Just let them be. You like freaks. You like something different. Imagine if everyone looked the same.
Yeah.
Be hideous. Yeah. It's lovely to see people dress up different and wear... That doesn't. I mean, my brother's non-binary, so he says, but it's not much sign of it, just a bit of nail varnish. But, you know, good for him.
Yeah.
But his son... I find little children are really good with transgender and non-binary.
I know, it's brilliant.
And they're really about wearing boys' and girls' clothes. But it's these old people, I'm shocked, really. Like, often I sort of argue with my... They go, what about men dressed as women in toilets? I go, well, in your house, you have a mixed toilet. You know what I mean? They're no more likely to rape you because they've got a dress on. What are you on about? It's just weird.
I've never heard that one before. That is amazing.
Oh, that's a
everyone
huge one
in their house. Everyone in their house has a multi-gendered toilet. Yeah. Oh, that's genius. I love that.
I think the community just punches inwards sometimes when if we all collectively punched outwards, it would make more of an impact.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I know, people have literally said... That you were in that program, weren't you, in America, in San Francisco?
Looking, yeah.
Was that one? Or was it in the other one, the Armstead Maupin? And there's a gay sitting around a dinner table. Mm. I think it was in Tales City. And there was a young gay, all for the non-binary thing. And all the old ones, we had to fight for this, we had to fight for that. They can as well. And it was like...
It's very ungenerous.
And I've heard people say it as well, and it really shocked me.
I know, it's...
So I think I'm very open-minded without... I never think to myself, I'm a very open-minded person, but I think I am now, you know.
But I wonder if that came from those formative experiences within those environments, because for me, I felt like everyone was themselves and everyone was allowed to dress up however they wanted. Like, I never actually dressed that crazy in a way. Like, I was just like a kind of emo kid in a way. But, like, there were people like Bishy that would turn up every night in a completely amazing, you know, bespoke outfit, or like cassette player, or, you know, whoever, Mark Moore, or, you know, whoever it was. But I think that made all of us just accept that everyone is unique and, you know, Philippe Salon.
How
like
pleasurable
everybody.
Is it?
Yes.
How boring if everyone wore a suit from Next.
I know. And also how much you can learn and grow strength and be a better person yourself via everyone thriving. That's what I don't
know. I mean, thing is, when I moved here, I thought, a bit boring. Everyone would be, you know, normal.
Instant lemons.
Never lived any more weird in my whole life. Honestly, everywhere you go, there's something to look at and someone with a fabulous outfit and something exciting going on.
And you've become a real, like, beloved figure in St. Leonard's, haven't you, in the art community? Haven't you done an exhibition of your own painting and your own work?
Friday. I had opened on Friday. It's finished now. I finished this today.
Oh.
I wasn't overly excited. But I just did it. I was a bit in the doldrums earlier in the year, and someone said to do it, and I did it. And I thought, go on, do it, do it. And then I enjoyed what I did. So
what have you made for that show of your work?
I have to think, because I had to give myself a theme to... paint so I can do it, because I'm not like him. I don't spend all my life thinking about art or anything. I just do it every now and then and enjoy it. And so I just thought, I love the seaside. And it's kind of based on Instagram. So I did 9 squares, mostly pictures I've had on Instagram of like local scenes that I like. Right, and I put bright frames on them.
One self-portrait eating ice cream.
Yeah, one self-portrait eating ice cream. Beautiful. One of my favourite hobbies.
Me too, snap. And I've seen your self-portraits. They're great.
So I never think I'm very good.
I think you're great. But didn't you train to be an art teacher originally? And then
I did, yes. That was a funny business. I don't know why I didn't go to art school. I think I was nervous, thought I didn't get, wouldn't get in or something. So I trained to be an art teacher. That was 3 years of my life that really I've forgotten even existed. It's just like been blanked out. It was so boring. It's just been blanked out of my memory. When I did train to be an art teacher, and then I went to sign on. They go, oh, you can come and work here. I went, oh, all right then. Stayed there 37 years.
But now you're really using this art education to...
Like, I am.
We were talking about COVID as well, and you have these live at home sessions that were incredible, yeah. and you are a real ambassador for art and encouraging people you know, sit and paint and really unleash their potential. And I think that's such a generous
act. And I would say to them,
yeah,
just be proud of what you've done. You've done something. Doesn't matter if it's not great. Like I had one woman in my classes when I did them live, and she was so nervous. But she did these 3 paintings just with black lines, and they didn't take her long. But I go, they're so fantastic. And I always tell people to frame things because they look 100 times better. I go, you could put those in 3 black frames, put them up, and they just look brilliant. And she did, and she was thrilled.
And that pandemic kind of, you know, connecting people when they were stuck at home through the internet, it was called Isolation Station.
Station Hates. Yeah. They're so creative here. They set up their own telly station. So... I did quiz and I did art class. But the art class, first of all, the first one I was the model. I thought, well, I can't model every week. It's a bit boring. Because they had funny tech, so you couldn't really see the people watching. So I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll ask my friends if they're modelling. I could chat to them and find out their business.
Oh, yeah.
So the first one I did was Daniel Lismore. And luckily, I've got quite interesting people I can ask. Rui here did it, but... I thought because he'd done professional modelling, he'd be quite good at it, but he won't listen to a word I say, so I was like fidgeting like a madman, but it was still quite funny. But then I had local people as well, because there's lots of people here who care for, because the refugees turn up here sometimes, so there's people who look after the refugees, so I interviewed them, and I learnt a lot myself too, and it was lovely.
And didn't Julia model as well?
Yeah, she modelled twice. Nice. And then there's an exhibition, finally, when COVID was over, in a local museum. And it was so lovely because all the people on there kind of felt like a community. They hadn't met each other, but they were doing the same class every week. So they were so thrilled with it. I made them all wear name badges so they knew who everyone was.
That's brilliant.
God, you're good.
And some of them, I wrote either artist or model. And some people when they had artist written on their badge, they were so thrilled. They never been called. I guess everyone's an artist if you try.
Did you find that there was, going through the club scene and seeing... the crossover, did you feel like art and clubbing and the London scene at that time really had an artistic tendency to mix? Did you feel like there was like a real scene?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so. But I remember when, in the 80s, but then, you know, after AIDS, the nightclubs were a bit different. Like there wasn't so many straight people there because I think they were frightened or something. And so for a while, sort of at the late 80s, the scene wasn't quite so mixed and blended with the straight... Because that's all my favourite club, with straight and gay people mixed. But then it got more a bit like that later on, back again when people forgot about AIDS.
And in Taboo, you had people like John Galliano, so there was obviously like a big fashion element well. And I always remember, even in the early 2000s, the influence of Vivian and like Pam Hogg and kind of all these amazing fashion designers that in a way were artists because the way they approached fashion was so different.
Yeah, like, and Peter Doig used to come to Taboo and everything.
Yeah.
He's a lovely fella. And his wife, I think, worked at Body Map. So it's all, like, interconnected. And I love that I'm still friends with all those people now.
Mm. It's nice. And John Mabry, of course.
And we're all, like, in our 60s. We go, isn't this amazing? Like, my life's got better the older I got. Do you ever heard of someone called Les Child?
Yeah, of course. A choreographer.
Les. Yeah, Les, hilarious. Yeah. He goes, girl, I can't believe it. I'm 65. I'm doing this and that. They all love me, girl. I just can't believe it. And, you know, they, he was quite depressed in his 50s because he didn't have much work or anything. And it's and there's people, you know, like Kim Jones and that. He's really kind and helpful.
Yeah, he is.
And brings in all the 80s people to do things for him.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, and he championed
my friend Bailey Walsh.
Judy Blume.
Kim's Chris, got an incredible collection of Lee Bowery's archive and Trojan's archive. And what was that like then, being best mates with Lee Bowery?
I would say people think he was weird. He's probably the most normal person you could meet, really. You know, underneath it all, all the misbehaviour in that was thought about. And it was done for a reason. You know, like some people, they're just born naughty, so they just do terrible things and they don't think about it. Trojan, because Lee was going, yes, I'm so more intelligent than him. Trojan was just a working class boy who just did bad things. But all Lee's, because Lee was so well brought up by the Salvation Army family, had morals and class, just how to behave, banged into him from an early age, that everything he did was like a rebellion against it, but planned and known in his head what he was doing. But in the daytime, we'd just go to the supermarket, go to the pictures, just like, you know, he knew how, and he used to say, I'm glad that I was brought up properly, that I know how to behave properly if I have to. You know, because his whole act was just thought about and put on. Every minute, if you went round the house, you'd ring the bell, isn't it? And then suddenly the door would slow open and he'd be lying on the floor, hoping you'd trip over him, just to entertain you.
So you wrote a biography for him in 1997, which Rude obviously picked up and discovered all about him. Do you still have people, and this was called The Life and Times of an Icon, Lee Bowery. Do you still have people discovering that now and like Rude?
Yeah.
And do you feel like you want to do a follow-up one, or do you want to write a book about being like, you know, the accidental muse, you know?
The accidental. No, the name of my book is The Other Naked Civil Servant. He stole my name.
That's so good.
He stole. And guess what? Because I did art A level at school. When we were in the sixth form, we had to go to St Albans Art School to do new drawing. He was one of the models. And we did. He wasn't famous then. We go, oh, he's a funny fella.
Quentin Crisp.
In St Albans, yeah, you didn't really see people like him with the bouffant hair, but he didn't wasn't naked. He just had, you know, those funny little posing pouches with a bit of string.
Yeah.
Really?
Whoa. So I was feel special, me and Quentin, not that I really know him.
God, you've met some. You've been friends with, met some, had interacted with like huge game changing figures.
But in the most bizarre way, that I don't. It's not like I'm pushy or ambitious or anything. All these things just happen to me because. I'm not really good at making things happen for myself. I have to have someone ask me to do something, and then I do it, enjoy it, and then there's someone else ask me to do something. Sometimes I do rotten things because I think, well, someone might sit and ask me to do something else, and years later someone does. Because I love doing little jobs. My favourite, I like doing little jobs, little telly job, or a little questionnaire job. You know when people ask you your favourite things?
Yeah.
That's my number one.
Well, you're going to get loads of them now, hopefully, after this. They're going to be like Sutili's favourite things.
Sutili, what's your favourite sweet?
What is your favourite sweet?
I think probably Lindt chocolate.
Oh, yeah.
Or Lindor. But they're a bit, I think they're a bit sickly now.
Good.
An orange Lindor.
Oh, okay, very nice. Can you talk about the pregnant performance that Lee did, that you were present at, which has gone down as like one of the most iconic happenings of
it
his.
It was unbelievable.
Him. Where were you? What was happening around at the time?
I can't even remember. You know, I'm not very good at remembering. But he goes, come to this. I can't even remember where it was at. He goes, it's going to be a very special performance. You'll be thrilled. So I went, oh, all right then. So I went to see him and there was all this scaffolding and he came onto the stage looking enormous in this homemade sort of funny velvet square suit, little high heel shoes, but then top wig on. Then singing a song, blah, blah, blah. And so he went, oh, oh, and then just laid back on the scaffold, opened his legs, and there was a pair of tights with a Velcro crotch, I don't know how you say it, and suddenly it burst open and Nicola wiggled out. So all the time he'd been dancing in high heels with a grown woman attached to his body. You know that, and then years later, that fashion designer copied it. What's his name? He does the long black tops. You modelled for his
Comme
body.
De Gasson or something, no.
What's his name? Rick Owens.
Ah.
Oh, Rick Owens. All
yeah, because
right.
He had models coming out with strapped to their bodies. But funny enough, when Selfridges had a big model of Rick Owens outside their building, because he sometimes did modelling for this sculptor, so it was his body that was Rick Owens' body.
Oh, wow. How far out?
I know. And the legs of, is it George Cohen outside one of the football grounds, is his legs.
This is so hilarious.
I was always really taken by the Fergus Greer photos of Lee, and in particular about the way that the body, because I think that was Lee's thing in a way, was like somehow the limitations, but also what the human body could actually be, like beyond what we think about it. It was quite a liberating way of expressing himself. He almost wanted free each of us from our own body issues. Like,
and working for Lucien, because he spent so time being naked with him, really helped him change the way he made his outfits and everything and his style. Like, he started using his actual flesh more and not having so much, you know, clothes on.
Yeah.
And sometimes he just went out with a tiny little belt on, so everything just bulged and what they called a merkin, covering up his bits.
Right.
Did he love working with Lucien then?
Adored it. Absolutely adored it. It was like the best education he'd ever had, because he was sort of quite snobby underneath. And his voice got posher and posher the longer he worked with Lucien. And he really loved meeting all the fancy friends. That was his favourite. And then, of course, he loved going with Lucien, because Lucien's got a pass to go to the National Gallery after dark. So he once went to meet him there. Decided to wear roller skates.
Around the gallery. Love that.
And did Lucien like that? Did Lucien appreciate that sort of
eccentricity? Lucien loved him as well. Yeah, Lucien really loved him, because they both learnt so much from each other. Because he's really clever. And so, you know, they changed ideas, changed thoughts. You know, he was a million times better friends with him than me, you know, because he was more cleverer than me.
Do you think Lee would be happy to know that everyone sort of loves him so much now, and how much he's
influenced
popular culture?
I know. Yeah. I do my best to keep him going.
Yeah.
And always posting little things about him and that.
Yeah.
But so many times I think, I wish I could tell Lee that. I wish I could tell him.
Yeah.
I think he'd be a bit jealous that my picture sold for more than his. There would be a scene, but he'd twist it round to make it about him.
Because he was the one that introduced you to Lucien, so really it's his idea. Love it.
Yeah.
What a legend.
What was it like for him when he discovered that he was had AIDS? Because obviously it must have been daunting, but I've heard that he was quite a stoic guy in the fact that he didn't dwell on things like that.
I was the only one that knew. Cause I was at home, and he went for a test, then he never went for the results because he thought, I can't deal with it. I just don't want to know. I'm not going. Then he phoned me up and a couple of years later went, "So, you've got to be in. I've got to come and speak to you." I was going out. I went, "Oh, all right then, I suppose I will." So he came around and went, "Look at this." And he brought a letter in from the hospital that said, "How are you dealing with your HIV status?" Because he'd never got the results.
Oh, God.
And it was awful. And we just sat there crying. He goes, "This is it." His main worry was, "I can never go cottaging again." Bless him. And he goes, "You mustn't swear to me, you won't tell anyone." And it's a miracle I didn't, because I'm quite a gossip. And I kept that secret. But it was like a little game between us. And then he was very keen on trying to embarrass me in public. And he was very good at it. And always trying to lift my skirt up, going up the bus and things like that. But I go, "Just shut up. I'll tell everyone you've got AIDS." So that's how we dealt with it.
Oh,
I know it sounds...
God.
People didn't know us. They think that's quite a horrible thing to say. But,
it was,
you
black
know,
humor.
With
yeah,
us,
yeah,
it was... Yeah.
Yeah,
it was just... And then when... And luckily, he was only ill for about 6 weeks, but it was horrible. Because it was just before he did that the show at the Freedom Cafe. And he felt terrible, so ill. But then he still did that performance with Nicola.
Oh,
and I thought,
wow.
It's bad enough anyway. But when... I mean, it turned out he had meningitis. And the show was booked on for about 7 nights or something. He thought, you know, "I'm not well enough, I can't do it." So he phoned up the council to complain about it. So it got shut down. Did it himself.
Oh, he stopped his own show?
Yeah.
Wow.
By ringing up the council that there was nudity in this show, just so he wouldn't have to tell people. Because even when he was in...
Wow.
So I took him to the hospital and they kept him in. And then he hadn't even told Nicola, who was living in his house at the time, and he'd married. So he left a note for her going, "Oh, I'm at the hospital, come and see me." Didn't even tell her. But he said, "Well, when she walks in here, she'll see what's wrong with me." But it was horrible, those 6 weeks. But it was really intense. But at the same time, it was really lovely because we had such a good time together. Like, just sitting there talking and laughing and chatting and just discussing our lives. And, you know, they kept putting funny breathing machines. Oh, I'm going to make an outfit out of this when I come out. But he never did come out. I don't, you know, it was so quick and he never really knew what was wrong.
Why do you think he didn't want people to know just the stigma of the times?
He didn't want people saying, it wasn't stigma. He said he thought people might say he was just acting like this because he had AIDS. You know, his weird behaviour and dressing up and everything.
Yeah.
So he didn't want people, and he would hate anyone to feel sorry for him, absolutely loathe it.
What he thought people would think he was like, because he had AIDS, he was doing these performances as in, like, he wasn't full of mind and, like, or...
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh,
God, that's sad.
I know, it was awful.
I think also sometimes if people have cancer or they have a terminal illness, sometimes it's better just to keep quiet because other people can make it so much about them and it almost like,
oh,
people cry in front of you. Like, I've seen it even with you know, a close friend of ours who got ill, and then I think it's better just sometimes just to keep it quiet.
Well, to be honest, I had cancer myself. I had breast cancer.
Yeah, and you survived.
And I didn't tell anyone, not even one person, until I went to the hospital and I had it confirmed. And then I've always surprised myself how unbothered I was, because in my life I thought it'd be the worst thing happened. I went, oh, well. Like that. But what I hated was having to tell my mum. But luckily, she was on the verge of dementia, so I don't think she ever really remembered. But, and then, you know, I'd never put it on Facebook or anything like that, because I can't bear people going, oh, sending thoughts, sending special wishes, take these special medicines and all that. I just just went to hospital, dealt with it, and I was fine.
And you're good now.
And you've fully recovered, haven't you? It's brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've never think about it, really. It's just happened.
Yeah.
I'm an old bird. I can miss one bosom.
So, you've done a painting of it, haven't you? Did you?
I have, with a couple, but no one was very interested. I thought they were quite dramatic. No one was interested.
Well, we will post that
we're
painting.
Interested.
We're interested
and, you know,
to talk about.
The thing about art is it's all time. Like, there'll be a time when people are interested. It's
I know, there's
the
all a minute like that when
do you
things
know what
happen.
I mean? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you could sit for any other artist now as this muse that you are, living or dead, who would it be?
Well, I've got an artist at the moment who's working on a picture of me.
Oh, yeah.
Ian Brennan, he's Irish. And he wanted me to pose nude and I completely refused. And I've always said I'll only pose nude for £1 million. I don't even know if I'd do that. But anyway, he's now decided he's going to do this. He's doing quite well. He's like Ireland's entrant at the London Biennale or something. Mm. And he's going to try and get this painting to sell for £1 million. And then he's going to give me £1 million to pose again.
That's amazing. What a great story.
I don't think it'll work. Fingers crossed it won't work.
So why were you not pose naked now? Why was you so able to pose naked then?
Because I'm a lot older. I've only got one bosom. I'm not a pretty sight. And I mean, I've done it twice. Half naked, I wouldn't take my knickers off, and I kind of got slightly panic attacked. And it's like reliving that moment. I mean, when you sat for the greatest painter in the earth, really, you know. I've got this Charlotte Colbert, she did like patchwork things of me, and I had to go to Lucien's studio to do that because she knew the artist who now owns it, and that was a bit weird going back there. I didn't remember how many stairs there were.
That must have been really strange, almost like the ghost of a... Because his studio still has all the paint and all the...
Yeah,
it's almost
the
like he's
that.
Just...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like he's just walked out of the room or something.
And the guy had kind of made other rooms a bit fancy, though, because when I spent ages redesigning it in my head when I was sitting there doing nothing. Oh, if I did that... Because it was just everything just thrown around. And, you know, he didn't... And then there was like a Rodin statue as a doorstop and things like that.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's nice.
And you met John Curran at one point. Was this an artist that you... like to be painted by as well?
It's a bit rude, isn't he? No, I wouldn't mind. But that was, yes, I got a little job where I had to go and interview some artists in New York. That's a little job I like.
What was that? Tell us about that. That sounds amazing.
It was Mike Christie was making a documentary for Sky Arts, and I had to go and interview John Curran, some other transgender artist, and then another artist who... She's like just painted someone's arm, that much of someone's arm, but it took her like a whole year, and she painted every single little hair and every little freckle.
That sounds like Ellen Altfest.
Yeah, it does sound like Ellen Altfest.
Is that Ellen Altfest?
I don't know. She had curly hair and she
yeah,
lived in
Ellen.
Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's where I went. She
Ellen
was nice.
Altfest. Yeah, she's cool, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm just looking going,
it's a lot of attention
to
detail.
That.
Yeah.
I know. And like she was doing men's penises and that.
That's right.
That's her partner's penis. And all
this. She's done bums, like sitting on chairs as well,
Yeah. But it was fascinating going to her studio. So that's why I like doing little things like that. I don't want it to be my job, but I like it because she's fun. And I did the portrait live on BBC Two. That was good. But it was a bit of a funny programme, but still.
Well, you're going to love these quickfire questions that we're going to give you, Sue and Rue, because they are the ones that we ask all of our guests. We will ask you separately, but the ones we ask is, if you could do an art heist, you could have any artwork in the world, and we can see behind you, you live with a lot of art, your own art and friends' art.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
If you could have any artwork in the world for yourself, what would it be and why? And that's for both of you.
I would have Sue's first painting, Freud. Painted.
What, benefit just, supervisor?
No, the one, just to annoy you.
Oh, evening in the studio?
Yeah. Where you're really uncomfortable.
And nobody else could look in.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd probably have some sort of Matisse painting or something. Because I was always jealous that he had a wardrobe of clothes for the people to dress up in. And I go, Lucien, can't you get one? But John Curran had a wardrobe of clothes for people to dress up in that I was quite thrilled with.
Really?
So would Matisse decide what they would wear? Would he style them, or would they be able to choose what they felt comfortable in?
I'm not really sure yet, but in my mind, you choose yourself.
Oh, nice.
But to be honest, all his models wear clothes I'd be happy to wear. Mm. So maybe he could style me.
But hasn't Matisse also inspired your approach to teaching in art classes? Because don't you often set them up with models and backdrops, like based on...
Oh, yeah, always, yeah, with a bunch of flowers, model, something bright and colourful, yeah.
And the pattern like fabrics and stuff like that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Always, yeah.
I love that. The other question we ask every guest is, what is your favourite colour?
Red.
Yellow.
And why each respective one?
Bright. Best colour for lipstick. I haven't got red lipstick on today, though. And it's just everything. Danger.
Danger.
Love. Love. Yeah, romance. Yeah, it's all red. Blood.
Blood. Yeah, exactly. Blood. Life force.
Yellow, why yellow?
Yellow pyjamas. Yellow pyjamas since very early on. I guess the sun and Van Gogh.
Mm. Little sunflowers, yeah.
In the yellow room.
Well, I might wear a yellow dress on Thursday night for the big show.
Oh, nice.
So exciting. I can't wait for that show, posing for Sue.
Honestly, I feel like I'm going on about it so much, but it really is really special. Yeah. And I'm so impressed. When I first met him, I just thought he was a little student. You know, I didn't really know how absolutely clever and talented and brilliant he was. And these paintings, they're so amazing, I think.
How many are there?
He's got two strokes. Oh, how many? Is there 50 in the show?
50?
I think around... we reduced it to 30, like 23 paperworks and 7 on canvas.
Wow, that's amazing.
There's a lot, yeah. And so Daniel Malarkey is curating it. So I just gave him carte blanche to organize the way he wanted. We selected together, and then it will be a surprise for me as well. Yeah.
What are you hoping for the reaction to be? What would you like? Where would you like your work to go? And what sort of response are you looking for?
I'm enjoying the journey so far, and it was actually from the moment I met Sue I didn't have much expectations, high ambitions for my own. I had my own interest and just knowing Sue and being able to know all the stories firsthand about Lee Bowery, Lucien Freud, etc. That was kind of...
He has a part with me as well, though, so quite annoying.
Yeah, you have your moments, but I really like she read the whole book, the one she wrote. And so not every day you can have a live audiobook.
Amazing.
Just for you.
That's very cool. And, I really liked the there's a quote for the show where it says that you utilize your body as an instrument to explore the heights and depths of the human psyche because of the way that you undress for the model and, you know, all of these kind of ideas of the gaze. It's such a beautiful thing.
There was this idea of making a portrait of Sue. Obviously, I think I was the red herring there, and of course, I was always nude there, but... It was about Sue and her story and all the people she knew. And I see it always as a portrait of Sue and a portrait of observing this dynamic, actually, from between painter and
he's and very, sitter. Very good at capturing my ridiculous facial expressions about three strokes. So it's me looking at him naked, just going, like that, rolling my eyes. Yeah, and yeah. It's so brilliant how you capture that.
Then you just realize that you're going into quite personal things that you don't really control. And I guess there was this dynamic between me and an older woman. Who would that be, right?
And, an older woman.
No, well, we did. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that, yeah. There's even like peeing in front of Sue.
Oh yeah, there's a picture where he's just pissing right in front of me, a whole shower.
Yeah.
I didn't even realise he was filming. I was just sitting there looking on my phone and I went, oh, what are you doing now? Rolling my eyes.
So yeah, that's the cool thing about Sue, because she does like to appear, but then she's not concerned with her image. And so she never asked me for any footage, like to control what I could show or not. So I have all this, I have an archive of imagery I can use, and it takes me 10 years to look back and really realize what I was doing by instinct. And it's good to discuss these things with Sue, actually. Yeah. It's like we learn so much about each other, and that's the journey. So the expectations are fully fulfilled.
I think we all realize that Sue Tilly is the most generous of people.
Oh, don't embarrass me.
It's true.
You are so kind.
I really think you bring out the best in people.
You do.
And whether that be Lucian Freud, because you did. Do you know what I mean?
Well, you made his most famous painting. Or, you were there.
Yeah, I did. It's true.
Or Julia, sending her off to the knicker factory. I'm going to tell her that one. I love
her. I'm sure she loved that job.
Yeah. Brilliant.
No, you're very, very kind and honest, and you're quick to smile, and that's a really lovely.
And also you trust people, and I think you bring out a kind of connection, like a... It's something to do with trust, I think. And it's a beautiful
thing. You do automatically
have
that.
It's a rare gift. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. I was getting embarrassed. So I'm very shy, really.
No.
Do you get a lot of things sent to you, like people doing your portrait? Because I noticed in one article, someone in like Bangkok had done a beautiful painting of you. But is that something you get a lot from like amateur artists, from professional artists? And how do you feel when you see those?
I love them. My house is... People mustn't come terribly vain because my house is full of pictures of me. I'm so thrilled when people send me things. I put them on the wall. And then some I've got them hidden in cupboards. I don't know what to do with them all. Someone sent me a little knitted figurine of Lee the other day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, little knitted. And like funny little things. You just think, oh, how lovely and sweet. You know, it's nice.
But even that's like testament, though, to the impact you've had in people's lives, particularly like everyday artists, just people that are making art at home. I feel like the portraits of you have inspired so many people. Like,
when I was doing that class, I was just thinking, and people go, I've never drawn anything before. I can't believe it. Because before lockdown, I did them in... Do you know Wayne Shires?
Yes,
pub. Yeah, I did it in his pub. And this man came, he'd never drawn anything in his life. He was an electrician or something. And his drawing was so good. He didn't even draw the models, he couldn't really see it. He just drew the people in the room. And every week we had picture of the week that stayed in the pub for a week and he won. And he's still to this day, when I see him, he goes, I can't believe it. It was so amazing.
Oh.
And it makes you go, oh, it's
so empowering.
So nice.
That feeling that you can do something like that when it feels so inaccessible to you. It feels so unavailable. And when you are given the opportunity and told you're good at this, that must feel...
But also creating something out of nothing. That's what I think so amazing. Is
exactly.
That out of just a moment in front of you, you pick up a pencil, you pick up a paintbrush, suddenly it's
they didn't
made.
Even do that on my class because it was COVID. I don't think someone could cope with going to the shop. They had paintings in lipstick. Some even had a bit of Coke, but, you know, drinking Coke painted on it, that kind of thing, because they didn't have anything paint. So I said, mate, do a menu and do whatever you like. Because I've got no rules for art. I can't bear it when people have rules. I just say you can use what you want, mix this with this.
Well, I should say that having Sue as a teacher or a model, you never start from nothing. She's just loaded with stories and history. And so you might not realize, but you are art history in a way.
You're a rich material.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
I've said, when I was at school, I loved art and I thought, and I was reading art books and we went on a school outing to the Tate Gallery. And there was, I was probably about 12 and there were these hippies that were about 19, and one was sitting on the steps and a friend went and went their fingers like that and the hand was written art. And I was going, oh, aren't they fantastic? Isn't that wonderful? And now I've been in the Tate Gallery many times and I can't believe it. My picture's in there. two pictures were in there once because I did Sam Taylor Wood's thing for the Turner Prize. So, you know, she only did that because I was with Lou. You know what I mean? And so all these lovely experiences happened.
What was the thing with Sam?
She did. She was Turner Prize.
Yeah.
And there was this huge paint. I was in a film for it. And this one, you know, those panoramic pictures.
Yes. Yeah. The 360 photos. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was in one of those in like a pink dress and everything.
Oh, wow. From the 90s, from the late 90s.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
mid 90s.
Yes.
Wow,
I've been in them all.
Love that. The final question we have is what is the best advice you've ever received when it comes to your art, when it comes to your work?
He gives me this advice every single day that I never ignore. Yeah. I always ignore, paint big, whereas I tend to paint small. But what's the best advice? I think I watched the film about Jordan last night, Air Jordans. Mm. Just do it.
Yeah. I think the best advice is just be disciplined, put in the time in doing your work, doing it every day. And
he's always making me do more.
Me and Sue used to have a game, one drawing a day. Like 1 minute drawing at least, and she's quite good at it. And sometimes she
does. Well, you come up with very good ideas of things I have to draw.
Yeah, and you do them wonderfully. Yeah. So
usually about us fighting.
Yeah.
Isn't in one of the paintings in the show, he's got a painting, a drawing I did, isn't it? Me wringing his neck, going, "You're driving me mad!"
Exactly.
So he's kind of copied that picture. In his picture.
Or I integrated it.
I love that.
There's some portraits of you showing your drawings. And
oh, see, I don't know what's in it. I think, is there films and things in it? Or just...
No.
Oh, good, just pictures. No. I'm frightened.
No, but also you must be really excited as well, because you must be so used to, or I guess, does it always still feel exhilarating to see yourself in art?
Not exhilarating, just going, oh, it's happened again. It's weird.
I love that.
But I'm just so proud and excited for him because you're a proper artist, and it's your, it's shown all over the world. So, you know, it's just nice that I'm involved in it. I'm pleased.
So this is your first UK solo. You're a Portuguese artist, Rui Ferreira. It's at the Sunday Painter, and it's the title of the show is Posing for Sue. And this opens this Thursday, the 29th of April.
Yeah.
And June. Where are we?
No, June.
Yeah, I'm going to go back. 29th of June, and it runs for... How long is it on for, Rui?
It's until the 22nd of July.
Okay, great.
Exactly.
So that's fantastic.
And it's free to get into as well, everybody. Don't forget that part. It's free. It's a really inspiring show. And you can get
curated by Daniel Malarkey. Big
shout
out to
him. Who found
him
on Instagram.
Yeah, we've been working for like 3 years at least, and I created my own residency in St. Leonard's right after COVID, just to be closer to Sue again.
Oh,
actually.
You guys.
And then I was here for 1 month, and he came down and he saw my paintings, and that's how the project in London started. It's really due to Daniel. And
what's your Instagram, Rui?
It's Rui Miguel Leitão Ferreira. It's my full name. Portuguese names no one can pronounce.
We will. I guess we'll tag you. It's fine on our.
What happens now is just people just write my name Rui Rui, and because I'm connected with Sue and all her friends, there's always my name appearing. So
Instagram, Sue, is Sue Tilly.
Sue Tilly one,
and on there you describe yourself as a regional specialist, which I love.
Oh, that was a joke. Do you know Julian Gagneau, don't you?
Yeah.
Yes.
The stylist.
Yeah. It was a joke one day. See, he only lives around the corner. So I saw him yesterday. He says hello.
Hi.
And we were just joking and just making up ridiculous names. So we decided we were regional specialists, just so people would wonder what it was.
That's what I was going to ask, but I love the fact that it's a joke.
Yeah, it's just made up for entertainment.
I think
you're
the
only person who's ever really mentioned. Yeah, of course you can.
Because I'm Margate, so I'm a regional specialist. Love this.
I know.
Well, this has been wonderful.
You,
thanks,
Rui,
guys.
Thank you, Sue. You are both wonderful human beings. Thank you for your generosity.
Thank you so much. I'd love it if you come Thursday, but I know it'd be a bit busy and you're busy, but if you can fit it in, it'd be great.
Yeah, we'll try to get along.
Try our very best.
Yes. Yeah. For everybody listening, please go to @talkart to see images of all the works we've said today, talked about today, and go to Rui's and Sue's Instagram as well, and the Sunday Painter has an Instagram, and we will...
Daniel Malarkey has an Instagram,
and we will be back very soon. So thank you very much.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks,
we'll
Sue.
Be back
Thanks,
soon.
Rui.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye. You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diamond and Russell Tovey.
Follow us on Instagram at Talk Art, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in today's episode, with music by Jack Northover.
Subscribe to Talk Art at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever it is that you get your podcasts.
Give us a rating and write us a comment. Thanks for listening.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.